It's been probably 15 minutes since the Legislative Assembly has passed that law to standardise the age of consent for all lawful sexual activity in Queensland, a reform that is long overdue.
I'm a playwright who happens to be gay. Does that make me a gay playwright? I don't know. A lot of people are rebelling without knowing how to fix anything. We've got death ahead of us, all of us, and we better participate in living as much as we can, as long as we can.
Topple the patriarchy!
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Northern Ireland stands alone after Guernsey approves marriage equality, Queensland crowns age of consent equality, and Edward Albee takes a vow. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending September 24th, 2016. By a vote of 33-5, lawmakers on the island of Guernsey, an autonomous British Crown dependency, approved a bill on September 21st to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Passage follows similar successful campaigns in the Isle of Man and Jersey. Ellie Jones is vice president of Liberate, a pro-marriage equality group. "We are ecstatic that Guernsey is now a more equal place to live," she said, "and that the states have demonstrated their support for LGBTQ islanders, some of whom have waited a very long time to be able to get married." The new legislation must now be officially approved by the Privy Council. But barring any unexpected bumps on the way down the aisle, the first weddings of gay and lesbian couples in Guernsey are expected to take place by the middle of next year. Northern Ireland is now the only part of the British Isles where civil marriage is denied to same-gender couples. The ruling Democratic Unionist Party has blocked every effort to even introduce a civil marriage equality bill in Parliament.
Chile's president, Michelle Bachelet, told the United Nations panel on LGBT rights this week that her government has committed to submit to Congress a bill on marriage equality during the first half of 2017. Furthermore, she added, it will also consider governmental support for several measures destined to strengthen the rights of the LGBT community, including reforms to anti-discrimination laws. The Chilean Congress created civil unions for gay and lesbian couples only last year, but opening civil marriage to them, according to LGBT advocacy groups, would provide those couples with added benefits, including welfare and state life insurance rights, in addition to clarifying adoption laws. Elsewhere in South America, Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay have already opened civil marriage to same-gender couples.
LGBT Pride was peacefully celebrated in Belgrade on September 18th. An estimated 5,000 police officers protected several hundred Pride paraders as the procession wound its way through the center of the Serbian capital city. Belgrade's mayor and other local and national government officials and foreign diplomats were among the marchers. Pride has had a rocky history in Belgrade, ranging from outright government bans to violent attacks on parades by far-right extremists when they were allowed to go on. In 2010, at least 100 people were injured when homophobic protesters threw gasoline bombs at the marchers and the police officers trying to protect them. Belgrade authorities refused to sanction annual Pride celebrations again until 2014. With a large invisible police presence, Pride celebrations have been relatively peaceful since then. Armored police vehicles were deployed along this year's parade route, and a police helicopter circled above the march to deter potential violence, but no incidents were reported. Organizers said the theme of the 2016 Pride Parade was "Love Changes the World."
In other news, the leader of Australia's leading opposition Labour Party, Bill Shorten, confirmed this week that his MPs will join the minority Greens and a handful of independent lawmakers to oppose a proposal by the Liberal National Coalition government to hold a national referendum on marriage equality. Political analysts predict that that combined opposition may be enough to defeat a bill to establish the referendum or plebiscite that's expected to be introduced soon in Parliament. Liberal Party Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull recently announced that the non-binding public vote would be held on February 11th and that it would cost $170 million, including $7.5 million each for the Yes and No campaigns. Opponents have condemned the plebiscite proposal not only because of its cost, but because citizens would be required to vote or be fined. But anti-equality MPs would not be forced to ratify what polls consistently predict would be a landslide popular vote in favor in a formal marriage equality bill to follow. The results of recent elections suggest majority support now exists in Parliament, even among some members of Prime Minister Turnbull's own Liberal Party, for legislation to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. Another point anti-plebiscite forces are making. But Turnbull has thus far refused to allow his MPs a free vote on any marriage equality bill.
LGBT rights advocates have also expressed fears that a potentially ugly political campaign around the plebiscite would encourage homophobic and transphobic violence, especially against younger LGBT people or those perceived to be. There was a stark reminder of that possibility this week when a bomb threat forced the evacuation of Melbourne-based Joy FM, Australia's only all-queer radio station. The threat was sent via email and condemned discussions of marriage equality on the station. It prompted a security lockdown and police response. Happily, no device was found and no one was hurt. A statement by the station said the threat highlights the damage that can be done through a divisive public debate about our community's aspiration to be equal members of society. Meanwhile, a group called Children's Future, which reportedly has links to the secret Roman Catholic religious society Opus Dei, has already started spreading fear-mongering falsehoods about marriage equality in flyers distributed throughout suburban Sydney this week. The group's three directors have been identified as members of the New South Wales Liberal Party. The Sydney Morning Herald newspaper says the trio is known locally as the Taliban because of their hardline religious views.
Officials in the U.S. city of Charlotte have firmly rejected a plan floated last week by a North Carolina business lobby group with the support of Republican Governor Pat McCrory for lawmakers to repeal the state's odious anti-LGBT HB2 if the Charlotte City Council first repeals its ordinance protecting LGBT people from discrimination. That measure in the state's largest city prompted the hasty passage in March by the Republican-dominated legislature of HB2, which bans local governments from passing similar anti-bias laws and requires trans people to use birth certificate-based public bathrooms. The state has already lost hundreds of millions of dollars because of anti-HB2 boycotts by a number of high-profile entertainers and by business, philanthropic, faith, and collegiate and pro sports organizations. "We appreciate the state wanting to find a solution to the challenges we are facing," said Mayor Jennifer Roberts, a Democrat, "which the state can do at any time without any action from the city of Charlotte."
We reported last week that the U.S. Army had agreed to provide whistleblowing transgender private Chelsea Manning the reassignment surgery she's been asking for since being jailed in 2013 for sending hundreds of thousands of classified U.S. government documents and videos to the WikiLeaks website. She's serving a 35-year sentence at the Brig in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Last week's announcement about the pending surgery ended Manning's brief 5-day hunger strike that she said she began to call attention to her depressing situation. She had tried to kill herself in July. And Reuters reported that she was seemingly punished by a military court this week to 2 weeks of solitary confinement for failing in that effort and for having a disallowed book in her cell about the computer hacker group Anonymous. A group supporting her says that Manning can appeal the sentence if she wants to, and a week of the punishment could be suspended if she stays out of trouble for the next 6 months. The group said that Manning could be eligible for parole after serving 7 of her 35-year sentence.
And finally, genocidal homophobic U.S. hate preacher Stephen Anderson, who was denied entry last week into South Africa and the United Kingdom, didn't accomplish what he thought he could in Botswana. The pastor of Phoenix, Arizona's Faithful Word Baptist Church infamously celebrated June's Pulse massacre in Orlando, Florida, by telling his flock that there were now 50 less pedophiles in the world. He's also called for the execution of all gay people by stoning to rid the world of AIDS. Anderson had bragged on his Facebook page after being rejected by both South Africa and the UK that his crusade would get a warmer reception in Botswana. But he was deported from the Southern African country this week after calling for a gay man to be put to death during a national radio interview. "I hate homosexuals," he said. "I think they're evil haters of God." Botswana is not exactly known as a bastion of liberty for sexual minorities, which is probably what prompted Anderson's visit. But the country's president, Ian Khama, took credit for deporting the anti-gay pastor. "I said they should pick him up and show him out of the country," Khama claimed. "We don't want hate speech in this country. Let him do it in his own country."
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 24th, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Frances O'Brien.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
Queensland says hello to a new way of life, and the world says goodbye to a literary icon later in the program. Amazon's quirky and queer comedy series about a family whose patriarch becomes a matriarch was a repeat winner at the 68th Annual Primetime Emmy Awards on September 25th. Transparent's Jeffrey Tambor accepted his Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy Series trophy by wishing himself out of a job.
"I'm not going to say this beautifully, but to you people out there, you producers and you network owners and you agents and you creative sparks, please give transgender talent a chance. Give them audition. Give them their story. And also, one more thing, I would not be unhappy were I the last cisgender male to play a female transgender on television."
Transparent creator and Outstanding Comedy Series director Jill Soloway made her Emmy speech even more political and saluted the Amazon ally who greenlighted the show.
"When you take women, people of color, trans people, queer people, and you put them at the center of the story, these subjects instead of the objects, you change the world, we found out. We found out. But I want to thank you, my sweet Jeff Bezos, because you changed the world. And you invited me to do this thing that these people call television, but I call a revolution. I've always wanted to be part of a movement. Civil rights movement, the feminist movement. This TV show allows me to take unlikable Jewish people, queer folk, trans folk, and make them the heroes. Thank you to the trans community for your lived lives. We need to stop violence against transgender women and topple the patriarchy. Topple the patriarchy."
In other Emmy news, out lesbian actress Sarah Paulson honored the out gay producer of American Horror Story and The People vs. O.J., both of which garnered her nominations. When Paulson accepted the Outstanding Lead Actress in a Limited TV Series for the latter, she also blew a kiss to her real-life romantic interest, who won the hearts of television viewers as Evelyn Harper on 2 and a Half Men.
"Ryan Patrick Murphy, I owe you everything. It was because you thought I could that I even dared. You have been the most tried and true boss man, collaborator, mentor, and most importantly, my beautiful friend. You changed my life. And Holland Taylor, I love you. Thank you."
"I decided to become a playwright because I failed at everything else."
We'll dim the lights of Broadway for a fond farewell. But first,
"Everyone thinks that I'm a freak, the way I dress, the way I speak. I'm too thin, I hate my voice. I'd switch lives if I had the choice. I'll be tall and rich someday. Everything will go my way. Someday, someday."
It used to rival Tasmania as Australia's most repressive anti-LGBT place to live. But like the island state, Queensland has made great strides towards equality in recent times. This Way Out Brisbane correspondent John Frame reports on the latest advance.
"Children behave, that's what they say when we're together. Cameron Dick, Minister for Health in Queensland. Welcome to This Way Out.
Thanks.
We've just had the passing of a health bill which has enabled, for the first time in Queensland, an equal age of consent at 16.
It's been probably 15 minutes since the Legislative Assembly of Queensland has passed that law to standardise the age of consent for all lawful sexual activity in Queensland, a reform that is long overdue.
The number of votes for was so huge, like 72 for, only two against.
And I acknowledge everyone in the Parliament who supported this reform, so not just the government, the opposition, independent members of Parliament supported this legislative reform measure. Only two members of the 89-member Parliament voted against it, formally voted against it. A number of members abstained. So I think that's a sign that Queensland has changed, that our state has changed, that it is now well and truly, at least in the 20th century, but I think it's probably in the 21st century now, and we want a society based on fairness and equality.
Michael Scott, Executive Director of the Queensland AIDS Council. This is a reform that's now 26 years in the making.
What it really means is that young people who are having sex can now be tested for a range of STIs, including HIV, without the risk of feeling as though they've done something wrong, without the feeling that they've been dirty, and without the feeling that they'll be discriminated against by their GP or by other people.
There are a number of reasons why this reform should have happened, as in youth deserve to live free from discrimination. They should have equal benefit and protection of the law. But the government, the Palaszczuk Labor government, decided to go with the health angle and the fact that they should be able to deal with their GP in an honest manner. And do you see that it will help the function of the Queensland AIDS Council in their work as well?
I certainly do, because we're already seeing young people who are presenting at our clinic that we run. And we know that young people are saying, well, actually I am having sex at the moment, but I'm reluctant to talk about it openly because I'm fearful that the police might charge me or charge my partner. And I think we will actually see a group of young people who will now come out from the age of 16 and say, well, actually I've been having sex for a while and I'd like to be tested for HIV, I'd like to be tested for chlamydia or gonorrhea or syphilis because my sexual health is important to me.
Cameron Dick, this is just one of a number of extremely progressive reforms by the Palaszczuk Labor government in Queensland, and we're going to see a couple of others coming up.
Yeah, it's an interesting time, John, because we're a minority government. We don't have a majority in the Legislative Assembly. We only have 42 seats out of 89, so we're dependent on at least three other members of Parliament supporting us. But we've been able to reform our law in relation to civil unions for gay Queenslanders, so their relationship can be properly recognised under the law of Queensland. We've got reforms coming through in relation to changing the law of provocation in the criminal context. That's to remove the gay panic defence from the law in Queensland, and also steps being taken by the government to expunge historical homosexual convictions, which is an important law reform measure which we see reflected in the reform we've seen through the Parliament today. So there are some things that are happening that shows Queensland continues its progression to fairness and equality, and I'm delighted to be part of that government.
My sincere congratulations and thanks to you.
Thanks to you, John, and everyone who's campaigned so long and hard for this. It's a privilege for me to be able to work for you in the Parliament and for a lot of people, particularly young people, who need the law changed.
That was Queensland Health Minister Cameron Dick, and I'm John Frame in Brisbane for This Way Out.
I'm Michael Cunningham, author of The Hours and By Nightfall. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Edward Albee took his final bow on September 16th. One of the most honored playwrights of the 20th century, the openly gay theater genius won 3 Pulitzer Prizes, 3 Tony Awards, and many more honors for works that took on artificial social values, condemned complacency, and stood, in his words, against the fiction that everything in this slipping land of ours is peachy keen. I'll be spoke in 2009 with This Way Out correspondents Dixie Trico and John Townsend.
I was an orphan. I was adopted into a rich family. Their values were, I thought, pretty unfortunate. Even very young, I didn't like their values. Their family took me down to Palm Beach, Florida every winter when they had a house on the ocean. You can't imagine how terrible Palm Beach was. Black people had to leave the island of Palm Beach by sunset. Of course, no Jews were allowed to have property there. How I turned out to be a human being, in spite of all of that, I really don't know. Maybe because I was not theirs.
As you were deciding to become a playwright...
I decided to become a playwright because I failed at everything else.
You wrote some fiction and poetry as well,
right? Sure, I started off with poetry. I wrote the two worst novels that could ever be written by an American teenager. But I figured out that I was a writer since I was incompetent to become a composer, which is what I wanted first.
Oh, I notice in your plays that they're very musical.
Yeah, they are indeed.
Some of your influences...
Well, I had more influences than you can possibly imagine since I read more than most kids, listened to more classical music than most kids, and looked at art more than most kids did. So I was being happily bombarded constantly by the other arts.
What happened then when you actually began to write plays?
With the exception of one play I wrote when I was 12 and a half, exception of that, I didn't write my first play, The Zoo Story, until I was 28, and I'd failed at all of the branches of writing. When I wrote The Zoo Story, I realized, Edward, this is better than anything else you've ever written, and this may be okay. When I wrote that play, I had a sense, you know?
How do you think American theater has changed from when you were young to what's happening today?
The terrible commercial things that have happened to theater. The awful killing hand of commerce has really done serious damage to our theater. The costs of producing a play now are prohibitive, and the cost of an audience going to a play is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. When we did my play, The Zoo Story, on Crap's Last Tape off Broadway in 1960, the tickets were $2.50. Now off Broadway, the tickets are $75, and inflation hasn't done that. With inflation, it would only be a third of that. All of the costs have gone up, and so you can't get young people going to the theater, and you can't get low-income people going to the theater, and that's who we need there.
You've talked about the need for people to be rebellious and for young people to rebel against things, and that comes up in your plays. And...
Yeah, but only against the things that should be rebelled against. That's what's wrong with our educational system. We don't educate people in something that used to be called civics, where you were taught how government functions and where the errors are. And nobody's taught that stuff anymore, so a lot of people are rebelling without knowing how to fix anything. I used to talk to students in the early 60s during the rebellious times, and their hearts were in the right place, their minds were in the right place, but you couldn't talk a dialectic to them for more than 2 minutes before they were out of their depth. That was a shame. If they'd known more specifically about how to fix what they were angry about, we could have accomplished a lot more.
Mr. Albee, you've talked about the need for arts education as well.
You can't have a civilization without a comprehensive arts understanding in the country. Our public schools do not teach the arts. I went to private schools, being adopted by that rich family. I went to private schools. I got a great education. And most people aren't getting that education now, and it's terrible. And we're supposed to be a civilization.
George and Martha. Sad, sad, sad.
Do you view your work as dark comedy?
I don't think in those terms. I think of what I write as plays. Dark comedy, light tragedy? No, I don't think in those terms. It's a play. It's something I want people to go to and pay attention to. What the characters say, what they don't say, what the meanings are, the implications are. Knowing that no two people see the same play, which is very important to remember.
You've always rejected labels, even the term absurdist playwright, even though you're considered by many people America's first great absurdist
playwright. Yeah, because most people don't know what the term means.
You've also rejected gay playwright.
Well, I'm a playwright who happens to be gay. Does that make me a gay playwright? I don't know. Maybe if you only write about gay themes, then you're a gay playwright. I don't know. All labels diminish in some way.
You did a lot of your formative artistic growth in Greenwich Village, and so there was quite a gay scene in that area.
Remember, my family sent me to private schools, and they sent me away to boarding schools, and boy, boarding schools. I came out as soon as it was possible, and I've enjoyed being gay ever since. I had no trouble with it, whatever.
You were friends with Ned Roram and...
Oh, sure, I still see Ned. He's doing pretty well. He gained a little weight, which he should lose.
Harold Pinter, the great British playwright, old friend of yours.
Harold and I were both very much affected by Sam Beckett, one of the greatest playwrights of the second half of the 20th century. But I think we both managed to develop our own sound and our own language, so the influence was helpful and not limiting. I admired Harold's political stances, and I admired his plays a lot, and we liked each other a lot.
Is there a play that you've written that you like more than others?
It's always the one that I'm writing now.
And are you writing one now?
I'm writing two.
I
always have two in my head. One is a relief from the other.
Now, you're going to tell us what they are?
No, if I'm wrong?
Going to the theater should make you participate in your own life. You've said things to that effect.
I don't think you should go to the theater and not have anything happen to you. I think every time you go to any art experience, you should be changed. Or you should learn something about yourself that you didn't know before. That's the only way you can keep your own intellect evolving.
You speak about death in your plays a lot.
Well, there are only two things to write about, life and death.
And which is your favorite?
You know, we've got death ahead of us, all of us. Mm-hmm. And we better participate in living as much as we can, as long as we can.
Is there something that you really want people to know and nobody asks you?
After 35 years with a great lover, I've been single for 4 years now, in case anybody's interested in an 80-year-old.
That was famed playwright Edward Albee in conversation with John Townsend and Dixie Trico in early 2009. I don't like the idea of getting older and older, Albee once said, because there's meant to be a time when that has to stop. Dying strikes me as being a great waste of time.
Isn't life beautiful? Isn't life gay? Isn't life the perfect thing to pass the time away?
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Francis O'Brien, John Frame, and Dixie Trico and John Townsend contributed program material, with thanks as always to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, for making this show possible. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For associate producer Alicia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WNJR Washington, Pennsylvania, to NSB Chatswood, New South Wales, KLAI Fort Bragg, Laytonville, and Willits, California, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.